Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to New Books in Israel Studies, part of the New Books Podcast Network. Today we are talking to Dr. Sayed Ali Alavi about his book, Iran and Palestine, Past, Present, and Future. The book surveys the history of the relationship between Iran, and especially the Islamic Republic of Iran, with Palestinian organizations and leadership. It also, quite obviously, deals with Iranian views of Israel and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Ali Alavi, welcome and congratulations on the publication of your book. Can we maybe begin by asking you what motivated you to study this topic in the first place?
Thank you very much. Well, the most important element that motivated me was the fact that there is no academically written book about the subject of Iran and Palestine. And there was a gap in the literature. And of course, I try to see if there are any similar books in other languages, such as Hebrew, Arabic, or Farsi, but I noticed there is none. So that motivated me to write something about this and present for future research.
I see. It obviously fills a gap. Anyone who's dealt with the field know that this is one of the questions that is often discussed, almost assumed to be a given regarding the kind of relationship between Iran and Palestine, and your book sheds so much light on this. So, again, I want to congratulate you on this. I'm sorry. Now, your chapters are ordered chronologically, and it may also be best to discuss the book this way. Let us begin then with pre-revolutionary Iran, the royal Iran. The positive relations between the state of Israel and the Shah's regime are pretty well known. They're often discussed as a historical fact. And you managed to shift the gaze or the focus to the way in which the opposition to the Shah's regime also went hand in hand with a strong support for the Palestinian cause. Can you please elaborate a bit on this?
A very good question. First of all, when we talk about the relations between Iran and Palestine, most of the discussions are about Iran and Palestine and Israel after 1979 revolution. But the book is actually delving into two, three decades before the revolution. Of course, it looks into the role of ideas and ideology. During the Shah's government, Iran had cordial relations with Israel based on the ideology of the Pahlavi state. But at the same time, anti-Pahlavi opposition groups in Iran had clashing ideologies with the state. The book is looking into a history of dividing it to two sections. First is Iranian left-wing activists, Iranian socialists, and communists. So it looks, it also opens up the archive and sees the reasons why Iranian leftists and Iranian socialists and communists had cordial relations with Palestinians, and they opened up to PLO. This was a kind of ideological connection that both they had. First of all, Iranian leftist anti-Shah forces were very critical about Iran having good relations with Israel. And they did see PLO in the same front line. From their point of view, it was also galvanized by the Cold War and the era of nationalization and socialism around the world. So for the Iranian leftist parties, PLO was ideologically close to them, and versus the Shah and Israel. So they created that kind of a connections. The book is also looking into modus operandi and how Iranian leftists established the connections with Arafat. And it was quite very interesting to see how some of these Iranians actually traveled to Syria and Iraq, and they were trained by PLO. Within them is Fadais, guerrilla forces, MKO or Mujahideens, and also smaller groups. But what motivated them was the ideology of anti-imperialism during the Cold War. The second section of the first chapter looks into the Islamist anti-Shah opposition forces. And it goes even before, in terms of the history, before the leftists. It goes back to 1948 when Shia clerics actually started to look into the concept of Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And the tendency was to some extent a bit different with the leftists. For them, the Palestinian cause against Israel was symbolically important because, first of all, it was they did view Palestinians as part of the Islamic Ummah being confronted by Israel, and therefore Shia clerics began to enter the conflict of Israeli-Palestinian. Fabric of the conflict. So it started with 1948, and then the book start to talk about all the history of all the Shia clerics and Ayatollahs, and to see how they did see Palestinian cause and how they dealt with this in terms of Islamic solidarity, in terms of religious solidarity, and also they had one thing in common with the leftists, which was anti-Shah. So because Shah had a very good connection with Israel, that actually acted as a catalyst. So both oppositions supported the Palestinians.
By the way, as a side question to this fascinating discussion, may I ask if there were oppositional figures, both from the left and from the clerical class, who, while being opposed to the Shah, saw a way to maybe relate positively to Zionism in Israel? Or was this really a unified opposition to the Shah and his partner in Israel?
Well, within the Islamist campaign, I didn't see any prominent figure to oppose the Shah but have good connections with Zionists. They actually, even some of those clerics, Shia clerics, said they were not interested in politics, internal politics, and they didn't necessarily stand against the Shah, such as Ayatollah Burujerdi or many other clerics. They opposed State of Israel, and they supported Palestinian cause. For them, it was merely religious, and especially the role of Jerusalem and Dome of the Rock or Al-Aqsa Mosque connected them indirectly to the Palestinian cause. So it was mainly based on the religious and theoretical elements of the belief. Within the leftists, prominent leftists also were influenced by the environment of Cold War, and they did see Shah and Israel part of the American satellite, and of course PLO. They did see PLO as a kind of a freedom fighters movement, so they supported PLO. There were a few, but not prominent, that they opposed the Shah, but not necessarily had anti-Zionist, tendencies. Very, very few, for example, the Kurdish Democratic Party, they opposed the Shah, but they didn't have anti-Zionist tendencies. Whereas the rest of the leftists, such as Ali Shariati, Mujahideen MKO, and Fadais, they were very active in communicating with PLO and even being trained by PLO. And the book is actually delve into the concept of it. And also students, university students opposing the Shah. So it was a kind of a rainbow consensus, unwritten consensus amongst those opposing the Shah to support the Palestinians against Israel. But the religious components were not necessarily because of the Shah. The religious clerics were actually looking into Palestine as a part of their Islamic duty to support Palestine. Even some of them didn't have any problem with the Shah, but it was more based on religious aspects rather than the leftists.
I understood. Now, the second chapter, if we move forward, deals with the first decade of the Islamic Republic, which is also a decade of war, obviously, between Iran and Iraq. How did the war influence the relations between Iran and the Palestinians at the time?
The second chapter also starts with looking into the history of how Arafat was the first foreign leader to visit Iran after the revolution, and the honeymoon between two sides, between the Islamic Republic and Arafat, which was very short-lived. And there are two elements the book is looking into it. One of them is the embassy hostage crisis when Iran revolutionaries took American diplomats as hostages, and then Iran and Iraq war. These two elements affected the honeymoon between Arafat and Iran, but also is because Arafat, during Iran-Iraq war, was in the corner to decide who to support, either Iran as an Islamic revolutionary state or Iraq as a pan-Arabist, Baathist state. Arafat attempted to mediate, but it was not very fruitful. Therefore, ideologically got closer to Iraq. But in terms of how affected the relations, affected in terms of the relations between PLO and the Islamic Republic was cooled down. And the Iranian regime, after revolution, noted that Arafat is not a reliable partner because of the ideological differences. So, but what they did in terms of their Islamic religious tendencies, they changed the label of the war, and they tried to label Saddam Hussein as a Baathist Zionist. So in other words, it did affect relations with PLO, but it didn't affect their solidarity with the Palestinian cause, which later on we have a book, it talks about the emergence of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad as new, allies to the Islamic Republic.
Yeah, so maybe we can move on exactly to this. The next two chapters in the book discuss Iran's relations with these two leading Palestinian movements, the Islamic Jihad and Hamas. So what was exactly the nature of these relationships? Was this an obvious covenant to begin with, or was there a need to build it?
Well, it was not something fabricated in the beginning. The chapter 3 is talking about the emergence of Palestinian Islamic Jihad. It looks into its ideological component, something that literature is not covered by this Palestinian Islamic Jihad as such. The rise of pan-Islamism within the Palestinians is coming to 1967, the book suggests. And because of the failure of pan-Arabism, some of those elements were frustrated and they moved towards the alternative ideology, which was pan-Islamism. One of them is the founder of Palestinian Islamic Jihad. So they were influenced by the way Islamic revolution in Iran managed to be successful and also to face the Shah's government and also the West. So they created first Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and later on the book talks about how Hamas came about as a branch of Muslim Brotherhood. So they were influenced by the success of the Islamic revolution in Iran, and they started to build up that relations, which explains more in the chapter 4. But chapter 3 merely talks about the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is looking into the ideology of it, and then connection between Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Iran started in late 80s, beginning of 90s, when Israel arrested some of the leadership of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and sent them to exile to South Lebanon, which they contacted with the Iranian supported Hezbollah and Iranian elements there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if we move the dial kind of fast forward to contemporary discussions, we can often hear Israeli arguments that both of these organizations, Islamic Jihad and Hamas, are in effect an extended arm of the Iranian government, and Israel's confrontation with them is a bypass way of confronting Iran itself. How would you judge this claim?
This is quite interesting. Well, the book is looking into this deeply, and to some extent provides a kind of a counter-argument. They are different in terms of Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Hamas. So book suggests that Palestinian Islamic Jihad is an organic ally of the Iranian revolution because ideologically is closer to Islamic Republic. But Hamas, in the next chapter, in the final chapter, which looks into Iran's relations with Hamas in post-Arab Spring era, actually has some interesting argument and discovery, which shows that the alliance between Hamas and Islamic Republic is quite strategic, but not ideological. So Hamas is benefiting from supports from the supports from Iran. But when the Syrian crisis started in 2011, that was a litmus test. Hamas explicitly supported anti-Assad forces, and the relations between Hamas and the Islamic Republic actually cooled down. Iran supported Bashar Assad's regime. So it did show that they do have disagreements. Hamas is closer to the Muslim Brotherhood and had a kind of hope that possibly a more friendly regime in Syria would provide a kind of a better atmosphere for Hamas. Ideologically, Hamas is not very close to Islamic Republic, but strategically sees that relations very important. As we can see nowadays, Hamas has got cordial relations with Turkish government and with Qatar. So I wouldn't say that this book is claiming that Hamas relations with Iran is strategic, not ideological. And to some extent, they have some disagreements regarding the politics of the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Now, as the title of the book suggests, you also have something to say about the future of this relationship between Iran and the Palestinians. How do you see this future developing?
The conclusion of the book is looking into trajectory of relations between Iran and Palestine. And although my job as a writer and academic is not to predict, but is looking into the future as well. So the relations had a lot of ups, up and down from since the revolution happened in Iran, from honeymoon relations to cold relations with PLO and even Hamas. So the book is suggesting that because the system, the regime in Iran is ideologue, although it brings national interest into its calculations, but the Palestinian cause is a kind of is some sort of ideological attachment to the Islamic Republic, and it cannot actually divorce from the ideas of pro-Palestinian tendencies, regardless of party politics. However, the book is not claiming that Iran's support for Palestine is absolutely harmonious, and the whole nation of in Iran actually subscribe to the same ideology. So you see a lot of changes in the opinion, the public opinion in Iran, that they are more are interested in the internal politics and economy. So the book suggests that the Islamic Republic as a system will continue to support the Palestinian cause and to stand against Israel because pro-Palestinian tendencies is part of the Islamic Republic's DNA, and it cannot actually divorce itself from it. However, changing that policies, in the last part of the book, he says, requires the change of the ideology. In other words, change of the system or change of the regime. Otherwise, the policies against Israel and as a state and the support for the Palestinians will continue with different kind of vocabularies by this current system that is in Iran.
Fascinating. Ali Alevi, can you tell us in closing what project you are currently working on?
Well, I'm currently working on trying to look into the concept of a global and regional interests, a clash of global and regional interests in Iraq. And I'm looking into the Kurdish question to see to what extent the concept of the Kurdish question is influencing the politics of the Middle East. So I zoom it into the case of Kurds in Iraq and Syria, and see how the regional and global powers are actually behaving towards the concept of Kurdish question since 2003, the demise of Saddam Hussein's regime.
Sounds fascinating, much to look forward to. Syed Ali Alevi, thank you so much for being on the show, and good luck.
Thank you very much for having me.